Chapter 5 Sword of the God Emperor. Poison will breach any armor. When faced with an invincible foe, simply bless his bloodstream with venom. His own racing heart will carry the poison faster throughout his body. Fear is a venom just as potent. Remember that. Fear is a poison to break any foe. The War Sage Malkarion. Excerpted from his work, The Tenebrous Path. Lieutenant Serlin Vith listened in on the Voxnet from his position on the bridge. Orders had come from the highest authority. Repel the boarding party currently rampaging through the operations decks below the bridge. Serlin knew there were other boarding parties moving elsewhere across the ship, but they would be handled by other squads of armsmen. Vith had his orders, and he intended to see them through. His men guarded the bridge, and he had a host of reinforcements on the way. He wasn't worried. The Sword of the God Emperor, his home for the past 20 years, was as grand a ship as any in His Majesty's Holy Fleet. Over 25,000 crew called the warship home. Even though a sizable chunk of those were slave laborers and servitor wretches working their lives away in the sweathouse enginarium decks. You didn't board a vessel this big. At least, Vith amended, not if you intended to survive. It was true enough that the sword wasn't in frontline service anymore. Equally true, the glorious ship had been sidelined from the major battle fleets. But she still stood as the invincible jewel in the crown of Battlefleet Krythe. It was a sign of the times, that was all. The Avenger class was a brawler, a close-range battler, designed to rage into a maelstrom of enemy ships and give out a beating twice as bad as any it took. It had the firepower to do it, but fell out of favor with admirals over time, when such blunt tactics were frowned upon by an increasingly defensive Imperium. This is what Serlin told himself. This is what he believed, because the officers said it so many times. Serlin's beloved sword wasn't out of the running forever. She was just out of fashion. He'd told himself this time and time again, because although he was just a soldier in service to the Golden Throne, he took great pride to be serving where he was. Above all, Lieutenant Serlin Vith ached for frontline service once more. He burned to gaze out of a porthole and see the blackish bruise of distorted warp space that made up the great eye, the nexus of the arch-enemy's influence. So he wasn't worried now. The sword of the God Emperor was unbreakable, undefeatable. The shaking of the ship was the endless vibration of its own guns, unleashing hell upon the accursed arch-enemy. When the shields had fallen a short while ago, they'd been raised again within a single minute. And even if they fell again, the hull wreathing them all in protective loyal armor was as strong as a righteous man's faith. Nothing, but nothing, would ever kill the sword. He repeated these words within his mind, not a trace of desperation in his silent voice. The fact they'd been boarded was, well, it was madness. What sane enemy would ever attempt such a thing? He literally couldn't conceive of the tactics at play. What fool of a commander wasted the lives of his men by hurling a handful of them into a ship that boasted over 20,000 souls ready to defend it? It was time to teach the first boarding party the error of their ways. Apparently their vessel had pulled some nice stunts to get them here, if the Vox talk from the Strategium was anything to go by. Well, whatever the truth, they'd managed to come aboard a ship that hadn't seen invaders in over a dozen years. So maybe the Admiral, blessings upon his name, was right. Maybe this was serious. But Serlin had a reputation for dealing with serious business. That was why, more often than not, he was the one that saw duty defending the command decks. Vith led the decorated platoon known as Helios 9, with a record of distinction and superior marksmanship that wouldn't have shamed an Imperial Guard sniper. He handpicked the men and women of Helios 9, turning down promotion twice in the last 10 years, because he didn't want to be raised above the station he felt best suited him. Commanding a dozen armsmen squads would mean he had a lot of mediocrity in with his finest soldiers. Commanding Helios 9 meant he commanded nothing but the best of the best. Helios 9 even dressed like they meant business. On the occasions they were tasked to descend into the depths of the sword's belly and bring some order to the criminals and scum laboring beneath the civilized decks, their sleek, dark carapace armor with its flaring sun symbol on the chest plate was a sign for every slave and serf to look busy and keep to the rules. Helios 9, the sunbursts and the niners to the conscripted slave colonies in the ship's bowels, were well known for their ruthless demeanor. A famous predilection for a merciless eagerness formed the core of their reputation, brought about from many instances of executing slaves the dead hint at disobedience or dereliction of duty. Helios 9 numbered 50 men and women spread across the command decks, squad by squad, 49 of Vith's favorite killers standing ready for the enemy, and Vith himself with the lead squad backing the Admiral's throne. Every member of Helios 9 packed a shot cannon for maximum short-range damage without risking the ship's hull. He didn't need to look around to know his men were ready. They were born ready, and had trained to be readier every day since. Nothing would take them down. Lieutenant Serlin Vith believed this without a doubt until the first reports came in over the vox. "Baltis!" one of the crackled cries had said. He'd swallowed then. Baltis. That wasn't good. More reports crackled in his ears, flooding in now from armsmen squads elsewhere on the ship. The transmissions were broken and patchy, distorted by the running battles, as well as the war raging outside the ship. But he was hearing more words he didn't like, more words he didn't want to hear. "Require heavier weapons to..." "Fall him back." "Throne of the Emperor, we..." As he stood in the center of the low-ceilinged chamber of the main bridge, Serlin tapped the microbead vox pearl in his ear, adjusting the needle mic to the edge of his lips. "This is Vith. Engineerium teams?" "Affirmative, Lieutenant." The response from the squads defending the ship's plasma drives crackled in his ear. The teams guarding the Engineerium chambers were, if memory served, the lesser gods, the death jesters, the lucky 50, and the dead eyes. Vith had no idea which officer he was talking to. The vox wasn't clear enough, but they were all solid, dependable squads. Not Helios 9 standards by any means, but good enough in a scrap. The reception was punctuated by violent shrieks of distortion that prodded at Serlin's hangover with cruel fingers. "I'm getting vox chatter about bolters and all kinds of death breaking loose," he said. "Affirmative, the voice repeated. "Be advised that borders are..." "Are what? That the borders are what?" "Command team! Engineerium Defense Command team, this is Vith. Repeat!" Wonderful. Just wonderful. It was easy to immerse himself in his own world, removed from the larger battle. The bridge was a chaotic hive of activity. Naval officers shouting and moving from console to console as they devoted their attention to the war raging outside the ship. Servitors chattered and droned as they obeyed the orders called at them. Almost 100 crew, human and lobotomized slave alike, working to keep the sword unleashing its full lethal potential against the enemies of the Golden Throne. With a moment's effort, Vith blanked it all out. His world was restricted to snippets of incoming vox chatter and the immediate area around Lord Admiral Arventor's throne. Raised on a platform to look down upon the bridge below, the throne accommodated the Admiral's slender, jacketed form with apparent comfort, despite the arching backrest made from the curving ribs of some strange Xenos creature. Admiral Valiance Arventor reclined in his bone throne, his temples thick with cables and wiring that bound him to the chair and in turn to the ship's systems. Vith knew the Admiral, eyes closed and seemingly lost in meditation, was allowing his consciousness to swim within the ship's machine spirit. He knew the Admiral felt the hull like his own skin, and the racing efforts of the crew within the steel halls like the blood that beat through his own body. And again, Vith cared little for it. Keeping the old man alive was all that mattered. The Admiral had a war to fight, and it looked like Vith did too. The thunder of the ship taking hits was still audible, but the hull itself was stable for the moment. Several of the armsmen shared glances. "Sir," one of the ones closest to the front of the column said to Serlin, "I know that sound. I served on the Decimus, and we did several boarding actions with the Astartes, the Marines' errant chapter, sir." Serlin didn't turn. His gaze remained fixed on the sealed and locked double doors in the starboard side of the chamber. The thunder was coming from there, and he knew the sound, too. It had taken a moment to recognize, because he'd never expected to hear it on board his own ship. There was no mistaking the distinctive boom of bolt weapons. They'd been boarded by Astartes. Traitor Astartes. Finally, confirmation of the enemy was coming from all angles. Naval ratings relayed to each other that the enemy ship diving past them was a confirmed Astartes vessel, excommunicated for heresy, registering as the Covenant of Blood. This was really information that would have been more use to Vith before he'd been comfortable on the command deck with only 50 men. "Helios 9, he voxed to the soldiers scattered across the outer ring of the chamber. "Enemy nearing the starboard doors. Show no mercy." He spared a glance at the Lord Admiral, seeing the old man sweating, teeth clenched, eyes closed, as if in the grip of some strenuous nightmare. The starboard doors exploding inwards stole his attention right back to where it should have been. When they had first come aboard, Talos had disembarked from the twisted wreckage of the hull where the pod had impacted. Aurum in one hand, Anathema gripped in the other. Despite 10 minutes of infrequent fighting since then, he'd barely fired his bolter once. The same with Sirion or Zal. The squad was conserving its ammunition for when it really counted, once they reached the bridge. The pod had struck the enemy ship in the densely populated upper gunnery decks, and the resulting slaughter was a time-consuming annoyance that had grated on all their nerves. Except Uzas. Uzas had loved every moment of ploughing through the terrified crew as they put up what defences they could with tools and personal sidearms. The bark of his bolter was like a hammering in Talos's head, unwelcome and aggravating. At one point, Talos had slammed his brother against the arching wall of one passageway. Under fire from a retreating rabble of gunners ahead, he had thudded Uzas's helm against the metal wall and snarled through his speaker grill, "You are wasting ammunition. Control yourself." Uzas writhed out of his brother's grip. "Pray! They are unworthy prey. Use your blades. Focus. Prey. They're all prey." Talos's fist cannoned into the other Night Lord's face, denting his helm's faceplate. It slammed his head back into the wall a second time, louder than gunfire. From the cluster of mortal crew at the end of the passageway, a solid round clanged from Talos's shoulder guard. He ignored it, blinking to clear his visor display of the flashing warning runes. "Control yourself, or I will end you here and now." "Yes," Uzas had finally said. "Yes, control." He reached for his fallen bolter. Talos could see the reluctance in his brother's movements as Uzas clamped the weapon to his thigh plate and drew a chainsword. His restraint had not lasted long. As the squad came to another chamber that housed one of the Grand Cruiser's weapon turrets, he'd opened fire on the servitors that hadn't received orders to flee when the human crew had run moments before. Talos led on, no longer caring if Uzas fell behind. Let him gorge on his need to instill terror. Let him waste his efforts on mindless servitors, just for the hope of seeing a flicker of fear in their eyes before the end. They moved with speed, slaughtering the ill-equipped crew that were foolish enough to stand before them. Most lacked the courage to remain, or had the good sense to flee, but not all of the mortals ran. Sergeant Undine of the armsman squad, final warning, stood his ground. as did a total of 7 of his men, their shot cannons firing a barrage down a narrow corridor at the advancing Astartes. Talos's slanted eye lenses flickered with dull threat warnings, and his helmet's sensor muted the sound of their ammunition striking his warplate to the sound of hailstones clattering to the ground. Undine's courageous last stand, and that of the valiant members of Final Warning, ended several seconds later, when Talos waded through them, swinging Aurum with several annoyed curses. These delays were getting on his nerves, and while shot cannons offered little threat to his armor's integrity, this kind of massed fire might strike a vulnerable joint or socket and slow him further. And not all those who failed to flee offered any real resistance. Dozens of mortals stood in paralyzed awe, locked in terror, as giants from mankind's nightmares strode past them. They stood open-mouthed, muttering nonsensical benedictions and pointless prayers at the sight of traitor Astartes in the flesh. Talos, Sirion, and Zal ignored these. As they moved on, the sound of a chain blade told them that Uzes was apparently not content to let the fear-struck wretches live. "Finally," Talos thought as he rounded yet another corner. "The bridge is beyond these doors," Zal said, nodding at the sealed portal ahead. At the end of the wide thoroughfare corridor, the double doors stood closed and grim. Uzas pounded a fist against them just once, resulting in nothing more than a small dent and the clang of ceramite against adamantium, a rock meeting an anvil. "Pray," Uzas said. The others heard his voice thick with saliva. He was drooling into his helm. "Pray." "Be silent, freak," said Zal. The others ignored Uzas as he started to claw at the locked bulkhead like a caged animal needing release.
"These won't blow," Sirion said. "Much too thick."
"Chain blades, then,"
Zal was already revving his up.
"Too slow."
Talos shook his head and hefted Aurum.
"This has already taken too long," he said, as he advanced with his stolen power sword.
Helios Nine was ready when the Night Lords hit them. Under Vith's orders, they'd taken up positions around the bridge chamber. The sheer number of adjacent passages offered a wealth of cover and corners to shoot around. The bridge crew were too wrapped in the orbital war. They had their duties to attend to, and although nervous glances were cast at the starboard door, every officer present needed his attention on the void battle, which kept them hunched over consoles and staring up at the wide vista offered by the Oculus screen. No one, least of all Helios Nine, had expected the reinforced doors to give way so easily. Over a meter thick, metal layered upon metal, the doors had stood unbroken since the ship's construction almost 2,000 years ago. Vith cursed as the explosion sounded. The traitor Astartes had cut their way deep into the doors in order to lay explosives at the point where conventional detonators could actually sunder the command deck bulkheads. Throne of the Emperor, where were his reinforcements?
"Helios Nine!" he shouted over the vox, without any idea if they could even hear him over the echoing thunder. "Repel boarders!"
Unseen by Vith and any of the armsmen, the old admiral's eyes opened, bloodshot, intensely blue, and narrowed in rage. The explosion and the clutch of blind grenades that followed was the signifying event that pulled the mighty Sword of the God Emperor out of the close-pitched void war. In many of the records that would come to be written on the Krythe War, the Avenger-class Grand Cruiser remained a powerful force in the Imperium's defense until its eventual destruction. Admittedly, the storming of its bridge was the blow that crippled the ship, leaving it robbed of some of its former effectiveness, but it continued to fight with all honor. History can be a humorous thing indeed when written by the losers. Curiously absent from Imperial records documenting the battle was that the sword spent its final half hour of life in relative indignity, robbed of its glorious fury, and its expected honorable last stand. Instead, it unleashed its reduced rage, directionless and limping, while it was systematically torn apart by the War Master's cruisers, among them the Covenant of Blood, which was not shy about opening fire on a vessel, even while its own Astartes were on board. A swift and decisive victory demanded no less, and Astartes engaged in boarding actions were trained to withdraw immediately upon completing their objectives. The blind grenades thrown by First Claw rattled as they skidded across the mosaic inlaid floor of the bridge chamber, detonating within a half second of each other. A thick burst of black smoke spread from each grenade, and while the smoke screens belched out by each device were nowhere near enough to blacken even half of the vast bridge, that was never the intention with which they'd been deployed. The four grenades clanged across the deck towards the forward gunnery station and exploded there, blinding the dozen officers and servitors at the prow weapons consoles. As the naval rating staggered back from the blinding cloud of smoke, the servitors remained where they were, slaved to their stations, and emitting monotone warning complaints at the low-level electromagnetic radiation in the cloud that stole their sight. At that moment, the forward guns of the great sword fell silent. On another vessel, the Exalted grinned, knowing First Claw had reached the enemy bridge. Several of the sword's bridge crew cried out blessings to the immortal master of mankind. Among them, only the most pious and the most desperate actually believed the God Emperor would save them. Helios IX, blessed with a paradise of cover in the form of angled workstations and railings, raised their weapons as one, drawing beads on the savaged starboard door. A figure emerged, blacker than the shadows from which it stalked. Vith took in the sight, a towering killer, too large in all ways to be considered human, clad in bulky ceramite plate forged in a forgotten era. He drank in the details within the space of a single heartbeat. In one hand was a blade of gold, as long as Vith was tall, sparking with lethal power and still dripping molten metal from the door it had sliced through. In the other fist, an oversized bolter with a wide muzzle, open like the maw of some great beast. Its helmed visage was painted with a skull's staring face, bone white over midnight blue, with glaring red eye lenses lit up from within. A scroll, tattered and burn-marked by small arms fire, was draped across its left shoulder, the surface of the creamy paper covered in runes alien to Bith's eyes. On the other shoulder, a clutch of short chains hung from the ceramite, bronzed skulls hanging from the dark iron links, like morbid fruit, rattling as the figure moved. Bith's tearing eyes took in one detail above all others— the ruined imperial eagle across the figure's chest piece, carved from ivory, and since marred by blade strikes to scar the symbol in a simple but effective act of desecration. The armsman leader had no comprehension that the Night Lord had taken the chest piece from a fallen Astartes of the Ultramarines chapter a few years before. He had no idea that 10,000 years ago, when this warrior had first worn his own warplate, only the favored Third Legion, the Emperor's children, had been granted the honor of wearing the Aquila upon their armor. He had no idea Talos wore it now, even defiled, with a comfortable sense of irony. What Vith did know, and all that mattered, was that a traitor Astartes had come into their midst, and that unless he ran, maybe even if he did run, he was a dead man. Vith was many things, an average officer perhaps, a little too fond of his drink certainly, but he was no coward. He would die with the words so many Imperial soldiers had died with on their lips across the millennia. "For the Emperor!" As noble as the sentiment was, his cry was utterly swallowed by what the Night Lord did next. Talos's retinas were bombarded with chiming runes flickering across his visor, target upon target upon target, detailing white flashes where weapons were visible. A single step into the chamber, he didn't raise his weapons, nor did he seek cover. As soon as he emerged from the broken doorway, he threw his head back, blanking his visor of all the threat runes, and he screamed. It was a roar no unaugmented human could ever make, as resonant and primal as a feral world reptilian carnosaur. The roar, already inhumanly loud, was amplified by the vox speakers in Talos's helm to deafening levels. Powered as it was by his three lungs, the cry stretched out for almost 15 seconds at full strength, echoing through the corridors of the sword in a flood of sound. The crewmen plugged into their consoles felt it physically, sending tremors through the vessel's steel bones. Across the ship, tech priests and servitors linked to the ship's systems felt the machine spirit soul of the sword shiver in response to the unearthly roar. On the bridge, Lord Admiral Valiance Arventor, at one with the sword's machine spirit, in a way infinitely more intimate than any other, began to cry blood. All of this went unnoticed by the armsmen surrounding their commander. They, like every other human in the sweeping circular chamber, were on their knees, hands clutching at their bleeding ears. Several would have killed themselves to escape the sense-shattering sound had they been able to reach for their guns, which lay discarded where they fell. Talos lowered his head, seeing the threat runes blink back into existence. The smoke cloud was thinner now, but drifting to cover much of the command deck. Everyone, every single mortal on the bridge was prone. The sword idled in space, most of its guns fallen silent. Talos imagined the War Master's fleet converging on the ship now, the eyes of every captain glinting with murderous intent. Time was short. The claws deployed on the sword of the God Emperor had a handful of minutes to achieve their mission objectives and get back to their pods before they were killed in the coming destruction. In that moment, something happened that Talos would never forget to his dying day. From 50 meters away, through a break in the smoke, and past the staggering forms of deafened crew, he met the Admiral's eyes. They bled thick red tears, the same trickles that ran from his nose and ears, but his expression was unmistakable. Never, in the countless years Talos had made war against the servants of the false Emperor, had one of the Imperial wretches glared at him with such hatred. He treasured the moment for the single, blood-warming instant it lasted, then whispered a single word, "Pray, Sight." At the soft command, his suit's machine spirit complied, masking the red-tinged view of his eye lenses in a deep, contoured series of blues. Through the smoke, even through the cover of consoles and workstations, the bridge crew were revealed to him in a maelstrom of blurry orange, red, and yellow smears of heat sources against the cold blueness around. Sirion, Zal, and Uzas stepped up behind him, and he heard their whispered commands as they activated their own hunting vision. With thermal sight active, they stalked forward, blades and bolters coming up to spill the blood of the sword's best and brightest, as the mortals scrambled to recover their weapons. The Admiral was the last to die. By that point, the bridge was a charnel house. Through the dissipating smoke that finally succumbed to the emergency air scrubbers, all one could see were the ruined bodies of 100 crew and their slain defenders, Helios IX. The 4 Night Lords moved here and there, taking chain swords to consoles and ripping the nerve center of the failing sword of the God Emperor to pieces. The names of the slain were meaningless to Talos, and he had no idea that the last to fall by the Admiral's throne, shot cannon pounding out its ignorable bark, had been Serlin Vith. Vith wheezed out the last of his life through his ruptured lungs, unable to lift his chin from his chest. He had been irrelevant to Talos, an irritating thermal blur, and the Night Lord had dispatched him with a simple thrust of his golden blade. As Vith fell, Talos kicked him from the throne's podium, his attention already elsewhere, as Vith's head cracked on a railing and the mortal descended slowly into death. Lord Admiral Valiance Arventor stared up at the creature who would be his murderer. The blood-coloured eyes of Talos's helm stared down at the old man, merged to his chair. Now, it made sense why the Admiral had not raised himself up in the bridge's defence. The mortal did not exist in the flesh below the waist. His uniformed torso was directly bound to his command throne by snaking cables sutured against his pelvis, linking him bodily to the ship as surely as the tendril wires in the back of his head tied his consciousness to the sword's machine spirit. Talos wasted perhaps a second, wondering when the Admiral had submitted to this invasive, restrictive surgery, and how long he had been confined here. A living piece of the vessel he commanded, bound to his throne as a half-human mess of flesh, wire, cables, and fluid exchange tubing. He wasted that second, and then, gripped by curiosity, he wasted another by asking,
"Why would you do this to yourself, Marta?"
He never got an answer. The Admiral's unshaven chin trembled as he tried to speak.
"God... Emperor,"
the old man whispered. Talos ignited his power blade again, shaking his head.
"I saw your Emperor a handful of times back in the age before he betrayed us all."
The sword slid into the Admiral's chest with sickening gentleness, inch by slow inch, charring the dusty white Battlefleet-Krythe uniform as the powered blade burned the material where it touched. The blade's tip sank into the bone of the command throne behind the mortal's back, forming yet another bond between the Admiral and his station. The effects were immediate. The bridge lighting flickered, and the ship itself groaned and rolled, tormented like an injured whale in the black seas of Nostramo. The Admiral's death flooded the ship's machine spirit, and Talos withdrew the blade in a harsh pull. Blood hissed on the golden blade, dissolving against the heat.
"And," the Night Lord said to the dying man, "he was no god. Perhaps... not a man,"
the Astarte smiled,
"but never a god."
The Admiral tried to speak once more, his hands trembling as they reached out to Talos. The Night Lord gripped the dying shipmaster's frail hands and left them folded over the blade wound in his chest.
"Never a god," Talos repeated gently. "Know that truth as you die."
With the Admiral's last breath, the lights on the bridge failed forever. The crew of the Sword of the God Emperor might have regained control of their ship, except for two factors in the Night Lord's attack. First and foremost, the teams of crew and armsmen that reached the bridge found the helm and every control console in the room ruined beyond use, displaying the jagged wounds left by the chain blades of First Claw. Using low-light visors to see in the darkness, these would-be saviors also found the Admiral dead in his throne of bone, his face set in a twisted expression that lay somewhere in the ugliness between pain, hatred, and fear. The command decks might have been savaged beyond fast repair, but the under-officers aboard the Sword had only to ensure the Grand Cruiser could move from the battle, and its armor could easily sustain it until it could thrust clear of the orbital war. Efforts were redoubled in tech crews and officers racing to the Enginarium decks, which was where the second factor came into play. Talos and First Claw had not been alone. The second impediment to regaining any semblance of control over the ship was that the secondary Enginarium sector was in the hands of the enemy. While this section of the ship was nowhere near as vital to overall function as the main engine decks, it was a significant disruption to power flow and drive efficiency. The Night Lords hadn't hit the primary sections and allowed themselves to be drawn into protracted firefights. They'd hit all they needed to hit, enough to take the Sword out of the fight with a minimum of delay and effort. Teams of armsmen stormed the massive engine chambers, seeking to oust the invaders. But second and sixth claws had left their pods with their bolters barking and held their ground until the order to leave. When that order finally came, the defiant Imperials retook the subsidiary Enginarium chambers, only to find a farewell gift left by the Night Lords, who had fastened explosives to the same hull section that their pods had breached in the first place. When the detonators counted down to zero, the explosives took out a vast section of the already compromised hull wall, leaving a sizable portion of the secondary Enginarium decks open to the void. This killed any hope of crew transit to and from the primary Enginarium decks alongside the starboard edge of the Grand Cruiser, and left the secondary engines silent and dead, directionless, with neither a brain nor a beating heart now that the bridge and Enginarium were disabled. The sword of the God Emperor rolled in space, naked without its shields, taking a million scars from the weapons of the War Master's fleet. In the space of half an hour, a handful of Astartes had killed several hundred Imperial souls, kept the two key areas of the vessel disrupted and only loosely in loyal control, and made their escape after ensuring no significant repairs could be made in time. Aboard the Covenant of Blood, the Exalted, already anticipating the praise he would receive from the War Master, ordered the helm to run close to the suffering sword and be ready to receive boarding pods back into the starboard landing bays. His personal screens mounted in the arms of his command throne spilled digital data in a ceaseless stream of green runes on a black setting. Second Claw had disengaged and awaited retrieval. Sixth Claw, the same. Fifth Claw, no contact. No contact since launch. The Exalted suspected the pod had been destroyed almost as soon as it left the Covenant, hammered into nothingness by the pulverizing fire from the Grand Cruiser's broadsides. A shame, certainly. Five souls lost. But First Claw, their pod was still attached. The last to be fired from the Covenant, their pod hadn't impacted as close to their target objectives as the others.
Talos, the Exalted drawled.
This isn't happening.
Sirion had to smash his chainsword against the wall to free it of the spasming, screaming armsmen he'd impaled.
We're not going to make it in time.
First Claw was embattled in the myriad corridors between the bridge and the gunnery deck, where their boarding pod had struck the hull. Around them, the great ship shuddered violently, already breaking into pieces. The Night Lords had no idea how much of the sword was still intact, but from the screams trailing across the hacked enemy vox, there wasn't going to be anything left worth speaking of within the next few minutes. They'd met a flood of Imperial crew coming their way, which at first had been a surprise and had quickly become an annoyance. As they'd butchered the mortals running at them in the low-ceilinged corridor, Zal had joked that it was amusing to see humans running towards them for a change.
"Makes the hunt all the easier," he smiled.
"You say that," Sirion replied, "but you have to wonder what they're running from if we're a more pleasant option."
Zal reached for a running female officer, grabbing her by the throat to drag her into a headbutt that caved in the front of her skull and snapped her spine. He hurled the body into the oncoming horde, knocking several people from their feet to be trampled by the advancing Astartes. Her blood was smeared across Zal's helm, starkly dark against the skull white of his painted faceplate.
"I see your point, brother," he said to Sirion.
As Talos listened to the scraps of enemy vox that reached his ears, Aurum rose and fell with mechanical precision, almost without any attention at all. A picture built up in his mind, a picture of the ship ahead, and the horrendous damage it was taking as the War Master's fleet picked it apart like a flock of vultures worrying a fresh corpse.
"It seems," he spoke calmly, "the gunnery decks between here and our pod are taking the brunt of fire from our fleet."
His bolter roared once, but the range was too short. The high-caliber shell pounded right through a running Imperial's chest and out his back to explode against the wall beyond. Sirion chuckled as he saw.
"What do we do?"
Uzas, more coherent now, asked as he laid about left and right with his combat blades.
"Can we cross the suffering sections?" "Gravity is out and they are ablaze," Talos replied. "No. We need to get back to the bridge, close to it at least. Even getting to the pod will take too long. The ship is in pieces already, and the crew are swarming like ants in a kicked hive." "Then we kill our way there." "Be silent, brother," Talos told Uzas. "The sheer number of lives we need to end is the main reason this will take too long. The gunnery deck must be in pieces by now. These mortals are coming from there." "How do you know?"
"Uniforms, Zarl," Talos replied. Zarl, always one to need the proof of his own eyes, grabbed another human attempting to flee past. The man's uniform looked like every other, white and generic. What was Talos talking about? He lifted the struggling man off the ground by his greasy hair, holding the officer's yelling face close to his blood-stained faceplate. Through the vox speakers in his helm's snarling mouth grill, Zarl's voice came out at insane volume.
"Tell me where you are stationed! Is it the gunnery deck?"
The officer, quite deaf now, hurriedly drew a pistol in shaking hands and fired it point-blank into Zarl's face. The small slug pinged against the ceramite, knocking Zarl's head back a little before ricocheting with a wet crack back into the man's own forehead. Zarl took one look at the deep red groove in the man's skull and dropped the corpse, swearing in Nostraman. He could hear that bastard Sirion laughing over the vox.
"Fine," he said, ignoring Sirion's laughter. "Why the bridge?" "Because it has several decks beneath it that won't explode if a lance strike hits them," Talos said. "And because I'm going to do something we may regret."
With those words spoken, he blink-clicked the spiraling rune on his retinal display that represented the Covenant. The Exalted listened to its prophet's voice more than the actual words he spoke. Talos sounded calm, but there was a hard edge of irritation in the Astartes' tone. They were cut off from their pod, and it would evidently take too long to fight through the panicked crew. It nodded its horned head as it relayed the orders to a servitor manning one of the lance gunnery stations.
"You, servitor?"
"Yes, lord."
"Lock a single lance under three decks beneath the main bridge of the enemy flagship. Cut at the angles I am transmitting now."
It tapped a blackened claw on a number pad mounted on the armrest of its throne.
"Break off fire after exactly 1.5 seconds.
"Yes, that should be enough. Penetrate the hull, cut deep, excise the metal meat without doing too much damage, tear a chunk of hull away, and expose the command decks to the void. It might just work, too. It would be a shame to lose the profit if this failed."
"Lord," spoke one of the mortal officers. The Exalted noted with only faint interest that the man still wore his old Imperial Navy uniform from over a decade ago.
"Speak."
"Servitors in Bay 5 report a Thunderhawk is readying to launch. It requests clearance."
The Exalted nodded again. It had been expecting that.
"Let it go."
"Servitors also report, Exalted One, that the crew is not Astartes."
"I said to give them clearance."
The Exalted burbled, low and wet, saliva stringing between its fangs.
"As you say, Lord."
The Exalted turned to the gunnery servitor it had addressed before.
"Ready, Lord," the servitor murmured.
"Fire."
The ship shuddered again, more violently than ever before.
That was close, said Zarl. His suit stabilizers kicked in, but it almost had to grip the arching wall of the passageway for support. First Claw had withdrawn to the command decks, no longer seeking to carve their way through fleeing human crew elsewhere. Here, in the darkness of the halls webbing beneath the bridge chambers, the Night Lords sheathed their blades and locked their bolters to thigh guards with magnetic seals. The ship's lighting here was dead, a legacy of the Lord Admiral's murder and the wounding of the sword's machine spirit, and four pairs of crimson eye lenses glared out into the blackness, seeing everything in crystal clarity. Distantly, as the ship's tremor subsided to a background shutter again, Talos's helm auditory sensors picked up a faint sound wave. A series of metallic clangs faded with distance.
"You hear that?" Zarl asked.
"Bulkhead's closing," Sirin acknowledged.
"Move faster," Talos ordered, and the squad broke into a run, their heavy boots thundering on the steel decking.
"Move much faster."
Dimly in his right ear, he heard a familiar voice.
"Master?"
The Night Lord sprinted through the blackness, rounding several corners and smashing aside the few crew that lingered, hiding and panicking in the darkened hallways.
"The squad," Talos breathed into his vox mic, "is using frequency Cobalt 6-3.
Cobalt 6-3 acknowledged, Master.
"Confirm our location runes."
"Locate the runes sighted on my augury screens. Lord Uzez's rune is flickering and weak, and... Lord, the ship is breaking apart with 80% damage to the..."
"Not now. Has the Covenant fired?"
"Yes, Master."
"I thought so. We seek the closest deck to the voided sections of the command levels."
The silence stretched for 5 seconds. 6, 7, 10. Talos could imagine his servants scanning the hololithic display of the degrading Grand Cruiser, watching the locator runes of First Claw as they navigated the tunnels. 20 seconds. 30. Finally.
"Master?"
The shuddering was so violent that both Sirion and Uzas were thrown from their feet. Talos staggered and left a dent in the hull where his helm crashed into the metal. The ship was coming apart now, no question.
"Master, stop! The left wall! Breach it!"
Talos didn't hesitate. The wall, which looked no different from any other in their headlong flight through the dark passageways of the command decks, exploded under the anger of four bolters. Beyond the wall, just for a moment, was fire. Beyond the fire was nothing but the infinite night of space, sucking the four warriors into the void with a greedy breath. Pain flooded him. Talos looked down, up, at the planet below, above. A dreary rust-red rock decorated by thin wisps of cloud cover. He wondered what the air would taste like. Stars spun past his field of vision, and he stared without truly seeing. Then a slowly turning cathedral, a palace of stained glass and 100 spires, on the back of the burning sword. He saw none of this either. Blackness took him for a moment, which blessedly dulled the pain. When it passed, he tasted blood in his mouth, and was blinded by the bright warning runes flashing across his vision. He tried to vox Sirion, Zarl, Septimus, but couldn't recall how to do it. Pain, like light from a rising sun, bloomed in his skull again. Voices spoke in his ears.
"Armor, void, sealed," one of the runes said.
Talos tried to move, but wasn't sure he could. There was no resistance to his movements, no traction to anything he did, to the point he wasn't sure he was moving at all. His vision turned once more, revealing pinprick stars and shards of metal spinning slowly nearby. It was difficult to see clearly, and that worried him more than anything else. One of his eye lenses was darker than it should be, blurry and black-red with dim, watery runes. Blood, he realized. There was blood in his helm, coating one of his eye lenses. One of the voices resolved into something approaching clarity. It was Zarl, and Zarl was swearing. Zarl was evidently swearing about blood. Talos's vision turned, and then he saw Zal suspended by nothing, drifting in the blackness, his brother's skulls on chains floating around his armor like a dozen moons orbiting him. He felt thunder, a powerful tremor, as Zal's reaching hand slammed into his chest.
"Got him," Zal grunted. "Hurry up, slave. My legs smashed to hell and I'm bleeding into my armor."
Septimus's voice came from the garbled darkness.
"I'm drifting in now."
"Do you have the others?"
"Yes, Lord."
"Confirm you have Uzas."
"Yes, Lord."
Zal's voice lowered.
"Shame."
Talos, now blinded by the blood smearing both his lenses, gripped Zal's wrist as his brother held him. He felt his senses refocusing, and although he was sightless, the unearthly silence and weightlessness told him all he needed to know. He was in space, without any propulsion, turning in the darkness without any control at all.
"This," he said through gritted teeth, "was the stupidest idea I've ever had." "Glad you're still alive," Zal laughed, his voice hard and edged. "You should have seen the way you hit your head on the way out." "I can feel it now." "Wonderful, you deserve it. Now shut up and pray that a cursed little runt you trust doesn't crash our damn Thunderhawk."